Les colloques du Collège de France.
Well, actually, there are genetic loci which have been, more than others, very instrumental in our understanding of enhancer function. And we heard about the Sonic Hedgehog case this morning, and of course another emblematic case is the globin system. And I'm very glad that Mira Kassouf is with us this morning. Mira is at the Radcliffe Institute of Medicine at the University of Oxford. Mira, please.
Thank you very much. It's an immense pleasure and a great honor, actually, to take the stage here and to share with you some of our work that is done on a single mammalian locus, the alpha globin locus, to try and understand how the gene regulation is regulated by enhancers. But why do we bother in the first place? And this is to take a very general overview of what we are doing. What we are trying to do is to understand how mammalian genes are switched on and off during development, lineage commitment, and differentiation. And we want to harness this knowledge to understand how these switches could be perturbed in human disease, and then to try to use that knowledge to manipulate these switches to improve human health. But let's go back to the basics, and what I will try to do here is to show you how the work on the alpha globin gene, which I will get to explaining a little bit more further about, how we establish general principles by which we switch genes on and off. I would like to thank Yom and Wendy for doing beautiful introductions on the topics of gene regulation at the basic level. But here's a reminder. I think it's largely accepted that the gene, complicated gene regulation in mammals is driven by three main non-coding sequences that we refer to as promoters that mark the start of a gene, the enhancers. These are the remote sequences that work as docking sequences for cofactors and transcription factors that feed the activation into their target promoters, as well as insulators that are the architects of the genome. They contribute to the three-dimensional folding of the genome that also seems to impact on gene expression. However, there are lots of questions that are still to be answered in that space, despite the advancement in our approaches to understand the genome and the code. We still don't understand very well how, for example, specific enhancers find their target promoters and how these target promoters are shielded from illegitimate contacts and expression that is not supposed to occur. And when we address this question in the field, we try to divide it loosely into two categories. One is about contact, because we do believe that for a gene to be expressed, it needs its target enhancers to come into close proximity to it, and under that, and also obviously the activation of the gene. Under the contact umbrella, there are lots of proposed mechanisms that try to explain how these remote sequences that are the enhancers could be brought into close proximity to the promoters. And you know, this is not comprehensive, it's just a hint of what is known in the field, as well as so many factors that have been implicated in that space, including a potential shared activation domain, the genomic distance, and how that could impact the insulation of enhancer activity by boundary elements and other factors, as well as the accessibility of promoters to available enhancers, which are sliding now towards more the activation space, as well as the compatibility of bound transcription factors and cofactors on these different elements. And also not to forget about something that Wendy has hinted to as well, the transcription cycle and the dynamics of transcription. So there are so many factors that converge onto that question that addressing them in different angles sometimes converge on the same conclusion, sometimes not. And to add another layer of complexity, if we're talking about enhancer-promoter contacts, we usually think about one enhancer. But in recent years, the question of how a cluster of enhancer that seems to act as a unit impact on all these factors that I've just mentioned. Most specifically, if we want to think about the varying constituents of this cluster from sequences, position, distance, and role point of view. So the concept of clusters of enhancers is not novel. It actually started at the globin genes many decades ago and was described as locus control regions. But in the past decade, many labs have described these clusters of enhancers in varying nomenclatures, and it has been thought about from all sorts of angles, wondering whether these descriptions mean the same thing. Are these clusters a new type of genomic elements? Are they just clusters of enhancers that work in an additive manner? Or do they have emergent properties? And have they been actually rigorously investigated? And to understand that better, we use the alpha globin locus as a model to study gene regulation. What I'm showing you here schematically is the cascade of hematopoietic stem cells going all the way to red blood cells. So this is the erythropoiesis that I'm talking about, and this is where the alpha globin expression is focused, specifically in the terminal differentiation of red cells. So the alpha globin forms half of the moiety of globin in the hemoglobin, the oxygen carrier carrying protein. And the beauty of the system is its dynamic nature. So we can purify different cells at different stage of the differentiation to give us a better understanding of the molecular dynamics that underlie the differentiation and gene regulation, as well as the fact that the alpha globin does not have target genes. So if we manipulate the expression of that gene, it doesn't have secondary effects and it doesn't perturb the cell fate. So we don't have any confounding factors that could obscure our results. This is how the alpha globin locus looks in the mouse. So it's one of the best characterized loci. I present to you here the open chromatin track that highlights the promoters, a cluster of enhancers, and conversion CTCF sites or insulator elements, showing that this sequence and this locus is very well characterized from a linear perspective. We know all where all these elements are. And we have over the years also identified that this is the part of the genome that is necessary and sufficient to switch on and off the alpha globin. Not only at the linear level, we know how this locus is structured, but also from a three-dimensional perspective. This is one type of chromatin conformation capture, which is a technique that allows us to identify the preferred interactions between sequences of the genome. And you can see here very beautifully how the CTCF or the boundary elements converge to create that loop within which you have a very specific subtag that highlights the preferred interactions between the cluster of enhancers that I have shown you with the target promoters. So what is also very beautiful that I have talked about is that the capture of the dynamics. So what we have here on the left side is how the expression of the alpha globin is increasing as we are moving in the differentiation from the early cells to the more differentiated cells. And on the right-hand side, concomitantly, you can see how this interaction profile is consolidated as we move in the differentiation. So there is a concomitant interaction and expression of the alpha locus through the erythroid differentiation. So the models, the experimental models that we use in the lab are an in vitro model and in vivo mouse models. to talk to you a little bit more about the hematopoietic differentiation, because this is the model that I used a lot to understand the various genetic models. We put mouse ES cells in a liquid media in suspension over a period of 5 to 7 days, and then immunomagnetically we can separate the mature red blood cells from the whole body of the embryoid bodies that we form. Indeed, the embryoid bodies that we form, which are these types of balls on the right-hand sides, they emulate the early embryonic mouse development and give us red blood cells that we can purify at various stages of differentiation using various immunophenotyping strategies. The mouse model was obviously very instrumental for our lab over decades. Indeed, the first dissection of the cis regulatory elements at the endogenous locus in alpha was all done in vivo mouse models. So here another reminder that the cluster of enhancer for the alpha globin, we refer to the elements as R1, R2, R3, Rm, and R4. And what we have done over many years is painstakingly deleting every single element by itself, and in informative combinations, creating mouse models that were bred to homozygosity, and then the gene expression of the alpha globin was evaluated. And the conclusion from these initial studies that were published in Hay et al. In 2016 is that R1 and R2 are the major activators. They are the real enhancers of the alpha globin locus, because the deletion of these elements creates the most expression deficit. Now, when we delete R3, Rm, and R4, they seem to have no activity or very little activity. And when we do the combination of deletions, it confirms that actually R1 and R2 are the main enhancers, and they work in an additive manner. So the initial conclusions from these dissections is that super enhancers are just formed by a addition of the components of the cluster that they form, and that the two major activators are R1, R2, R3, Rm, and R4 have no function. We were not convinced, because at the same time, other studies were coming up with different type of conclusions for how clusters of enhancers work, and we thought we could actually rebuild the cluster from scratch to better understand how the components work. So instead of deleting, we are going to reassemble it bit by bit and in various combinations to understand how the components work together. And this was in collaboration with Jeff Pokey in New York. So what we did, we created hemizygote mouse ES cells where we deleted one of the alleles and then replaced the second with a completely deleted enhancers, and we differentiated the mouse ES cells into erythroid cells and characterized the locus. And we can see very beautifully that by doing the open chromatin assay, where the gray lines are highlighting the enhancers from the top, which is a wild type, you can see they've completely disappeared in the total knockout. And it is almost comparable to a mouse ES cell, which does not express any alpha. And also when we do a POL2 chip, we can see that the POL2 has been completely abolished. So we have created a blankish canvas on which we can now rebuild our cluster. And the first hypothesis we started with is that the R2, which is one of the major activators that contributes 50% or thereabout of the expression of alpha, if we take that R2 and deposit it in our blankish canvas, it should create viable mice that can survive on half the amount of alpha globin. So that was the hypothesis, and we did create what we call the R2-only model, and this time we did go all the way to creating a mouse model of that, because we did not want ambiguity in an in vitro system. And what we have shown is that the actual features, the hallmark features of a typical enhancers remain. So that R2 by itself was accessible, so the ATAC presents a signal. as well as it enables the recruitment of specific transcription factors in erythroid cells and active modifications, albeit at reduced levels. And it was very interesting also to see how MED1 has been dramatically compromised in that model, both at the enhancer, the single enhancer, and at the promoters, and as well as POL2. When we try to look at the three-dimensional folding, you can see if we compare the R2-only model at the top with the wild type at the bottom, that that triangle has faded. And we took an in silico approach to zoom in onto specific interactions. So you can see that if we take the R2, which is the only enhancer, as a viewpoint for what interactions it is creating with the promoters, we can see that the red line, which is the mutant, is compromised compared to the wild type, which is in blue. And then if we do the reverse, we can see exactly the same thing. It is compromised, the interaction between the promoters and enhancers. Indeed, these mice were not viable. So contrary to our prediction, the R2 homozygotes were not viable. So we went on to the embryonic stages, dissected it at various developmental stages. You can see how the homozygotes are paler. And when we did the expression level of the alpha, instead of the expected R2 of 40 to 50%, what we have observed is a bare 10% expression of the R2. So what we realize is that the R2 by itself is incapable of driving expression and that there is some form of cooperativity. So we took on that blankish canvas and we built various combinations of the cluster that we also characterized by RNA expression and ATAC-seq. You don't need to focus on this, I've summarized the data here. So based on Hay et al., what our conclusion was is that the major R1 and R2 elements are contributing 40 and 50%, and in combination, 90%. However, if we switch to our constructionist approach, we realize that actually these enhancers have very little contribution when they are added by themselves. And when they're together, they barely contribute 40%. And their expression starts to increase to a wild-type level when we start adding the other inactive elements. In this situation, we've added RM and here R4. So you can see that there is also a trend where the closer we are to the promoter, the higher the rescue. And we can only achieve full expression when we have the whole full cluster together. So what we've concluded is that the R3, RM, and R4 have the chromatin signature of enhancer. This is why they're confused as being enhancer elements. However, they have little or no activity in various types of enhancer assays, yet they are essential for the full activation of the superenhancer, and this culminated in the study that we've published, based on which we started representing the locus such that the constituent elements of the cluster of enhancer differentiates the enhancer elements R1, R2 from what we coined facilitators R3, RM, and R4. Now what we are doing is taking the story further and try to understand whether these facilitators are not only identifiable at the alpha globin locus, but they are indeed a feature of the whole genome. And whether we find these elements, can we understand better how they function? So this is our workflow and the way we're trying to approach it. So ultimately, we want to establish the role of facilitators in the regulation of gene expression by taking two parallel approaches. One, to understand the mechanism of action, which we can start dissecting at the alpha locus. But this is not enough. What we want to do is to identify the facilitator signature that will allow us to look for these elements genome-wide. And then by combining both, hopefully we can get to the bottom of the question we are asking. And the going back to the mechanism of facilitator action, we have started exploring two different hypotheses as to what these facilitators may be doing. One is, are they purely a docking sites for more transcription factor to higher the concentration, for example, in a transcriptional hub scenario? Or does the position-dependent function that I've highlighted in the previous slides point to a structural role? So on that point in particular, we've done some very exciting experiments. So I'll take you through it slowly. In a model where we have only R1 and R2, where you get about 40% expression, what happens if we try to take an enhancer sequence and put it in the facilitator position? Would an enhancer sequence act as a facilitator? And the answer is no. And now in another scenario where we have a model that is only R2, so we have barely 10% of the expression, what happens if we take a facilitator and we put it in an enhancer position? Can the facilitator act as an enhancer? And the question is no. So it looks from this data, which we are trying to confirm further, that there is something that is sequence specific in the enhancers and the facilitators that give it its role. Now, the third experiment, which is equally very exciting, what we did is we took a model where we had the R1, R2, and then when we rescued it initially with the R3, which is the first facilitator, the rescue was very poor, if at all. So this is where we are thinking, is there something specific about the R3 sequence that is incapable of acting as a facilitator? What happens if we move the R3 to the position of R4, which is the more potent facilitator? And the answer is yes. So there is a position-dependent function of the facilitator elements. The more proximal, promoter proximal their position, the more potent they seem to be. And this could be pointing to an enhancer-promoter contact role, for example. Now, going back to the signature work, this is work in progress, so I don't have any data to show you. But what we're trying to do is to re-identify the erythroid super enhancers and their constituents. So this is red cell specific. Try to understand the chromatin characteristics, accessibility, transcription factor binding, histone marks, motif analysis, a lot of data we are curating and working with. We are doing also conservation analysis, and in collaboration with Alex Stark, we are doing STARSeq for the activity or inactivity of these elements. In parallel, what we are going to do once we get this iteration and clustering done, we will have a list of potential candidates that we will feed back and test in our alpha globin locus, where we have developed enhancer and facilitator reporter assays. So going back to our initial question, I think in the contact space, our lab has made major contributions. We've worked on the need of the cohesion loop extrusion differentiation, which is now in review. We have the facilitator work. And we have also just recently published a paper that shows that super enhancer conveys functional directionality. This goes back to the question of one of the audience that asked about the polarity of potential cohesion loading and work. But we are not alone in that space. There's very much lots of exciting activity in that space where people have identified sequences that look very similar to our facilitators, such as the tethering elements and the range extenders, the synergy and cooperativity in the labs of Nora Elfej and Christa Bucher, as well as all the work that Wendy is doing and many others. And with this, I would like to acknowledge our team, first and foremost, Doug Higgs, my mentor, the Gene Regulation Lab, past and present, my team, some of them are highlighted in blue stars, our collaborators, and I'm happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mira. In the case of the REX, the range extender from Evgeny Kvan, he showed that it would work with different kind of enhancers, that
yes.
The initial enhancer. Is that the case for for your sequence?
So we have not tested our enhancers in other loci. We have done a motif search for something that looks like range extenders. We do find some. So we are exploring how that may or may not link to our work. What is very important to mention is that the range extenders are not enhancer elements in themselves. They are sequences that have been shown to be either adjacent or embedded somewhere in an enhancer, and they recognize a specific motif, LHX motifs. Very interesting. We're always very interested in exploring how these impact.
And it's still not totally clear to me the difference between a super enhancer, a bunch of enhancer, a cluster of enhancer. And I had ever since a meeting in Chicago, Wendy, you may remember, I had the sort of feeling that a super enhancer would imply some kind of synergy between the different parts, and I don't really see that you have you don't really have a synergy between the R1 and R2. So, is that a super enhancer or a cluster of enhancer?
Bioinformatically, if we follow the Rose algorithm, the beta globin loci are picked up as the strongest super enhancers in erythroid cells. So, but we have to be, again, us going back to the same point, we use certain criteria to identify certain elements, and then we start to use it completely blindly. We do consider that the fact that R1, R2 by themselves have 40% activity, but when you add the facilitators, they're acting synergistically to boost. But are we, by using the Rose algorithm, picking up all the super or all the clusters of enhancers, is it fair to refer to them as super enhancers but not something else? There's still lots of questions.
Okay. Let's keep these for the next coffee break. Thank you very much, Mira.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.